Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, we're looking at a Ray Comfort video, which is titled, "Atheists Hate This One Word Regarding Noah's Flood." I'd imagine that the one word he's referring to here is kind, though being Ray, I'd also imagine that he doesn't have a clue as to why atheists are, shall we say, less than fond of the word kind. Let's take a look.
This week on Way of the Master.
Wait, Way of the Master still exists? I thought that was one of those old apologetics shows that just kind of fizzled out, like pretty much every show that Eric Hovind has been a part of. Huh.
Now, Mark, you touched a moment ago on the species and, you know, how it was that Noah didn't have to bring every single, species on there, but the kind. So we want to take a look at a video that we actually put together a while back on this.
So, next time on Way of the Master, you'll get to see a clip of what we did previously on Way of the Master. Weird promo, but whatever.
When it comes to Noah and his ark, two relevant questions arise.
How come there's no evidence for the flood, and how come there's a bunch of evidence against the flood? Those are the two questions that come immediately to my mind. Sure, we could go into a lot more detail on each of these, and there are sub-questions and categories, but if we want to bring it all down to two questions, these are the biggest, in my opinion.
How many animals did it carry, and how large was the ark?
You're jumping the gun a bit, Ray. I think before I'll worry about how many animals were on the ark and how big it was, I'll worry about whether or not there is any amount of truth to the story itself. This would be like saying that you're worried about how Zeus handles lightning bolts without burning his hands. Is that not a rather irrelevant question until we first determine whether or not lightning bolts are actually flung by Zeus in the first place?
See if you can spot the repetition of a particular word that skeptics dislike. Of the birds after their kind, of animals after their kind, and of every creeping thing of the earth after its kind. Two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. Genesis 6:20.
Yes, it says kind a lot. That's fine, I actually don't mind that. The problem is not that it says kind a lot. The problem here is the definition of kind, or rather the lack thereof. Because until we know what is actually meant by kind, we don't know what this passage means. And this may surprise you, Ray, but my main problem with the passage is not the word kind. Fine, I'll accept that after the flood, evolution happened at an accelerated rate that would make any proponent of punctuated equilibrium look like a gradualist by comparison. That raises a whole bunch of new questions and problems for creationists, but let's just set that aside for now. Ray? You believe that the Bible is the inerrant word of God and is without contradiction. Well, in reading this verse, how many of each kind of bird was on the ark, do you think? It may be helpful to add verse 19 into our reading here. And of every living thing of all flesh you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds according to their kinds, and of the animals according to their kinds, of every creeping thing on the ground according to its kind. Two of every sort shall come into you to keep them alive. Now, this does raise the new question of what the hell a sort even is, but we can set that aside for the moment as well and just figure out how many of each kind or sort of birds were on the ark. From these two verses, it's pretty explicitly two. It says it multiple times, both before and after listing birds along with all the other stuff that there would be two of. So now, let's turn the page and read the beginning of chapter 7. Take with you seven pairs of all clean animals, the male and his mate, and a pair of the animals that are not clean, the male and his mate, and seven pairs of the birds of the heavens also, male and female, to keep their offspring alive on the face of all the earth. This is literally four verses away from that verse that said there were two of all the birds. Now, Ray likes to think that this book was written by Moses. Well, if it was indeed written by one person, he was a sloppy writer indeed. Contradictions like this are part of how we know that the Pentateuch has multiple sources, and often scholars are able to reconstruct the individual stories told by each of the sources. In this case, the two of everything number comes from the priestly source, usually simply dubbed P, while the seven pairs of clean animals and birds come from the Yahwist source, J. And scholars have actually become so adept at parsing out the various sources for these books that they can often see where later editors made changes to one source in order to make it fit better with the others. In verse 9, the passage seems to be written in J's style, but the 2 and 2 part doesn't fit with it, so was likely changed or inserted by a later editor trying to harmonize the accounts. My point in bringing this up is that if we stop insisting on biblical literalism, the Bible becomes a much more interesting book with many insights into the different cultures in Israel and Judah from the times the books were written. And now the contradictions are simply a product of different stories being told in different regions with no dogmatic need to harmonize them. But when you insist on taking it literally at face value, these contradictions become difficult and you have to figure out a way to explain why it explicitly states that 2 pairs of each kind of bird were taken on the ark and then goes on to say that 7 pairs of birds were on the ark. On top of that, you're missing out on the cultural value of the book in what appears to be an attempt to erase ancient Hebrew culture from history.
That's right, it's the dreaded word kind, that archaic word that the dictionary defines as a class or group of individual objects, people, animals, etc., of the same nature or character, or classified together because they have traits in common.
Yeah, that is the dictionary definition. Not sure why you called it an archaic word. It's not archaic. People still use it today. So here's the problem with the dictionary definition. Which traits do they have in common? What is the nature or character that is shared? Sure, we can intuitively look at things and decide whether or not we think they are the same kind of thing, but this intuition is unreliable and scientifically useless. Few people would look at a human fetus in the early stages of development, and without prior knowledge that it was a human fetus they are looking at, declare it to be the same kind of thing as an adult human. Anything that goes through metamorphosis suffers the same problem. Have you ever seen a newborn kangaroo? Nobody without any previous experience would call it the same kind as an adult kangaroo. So how do creationists go about determining what a kind is? Well, the more scientifically minded ones engage in baramenology, which is like reverse cladistics. They often employ the same systematics methods as non-creationists, but instead of mapping connections between clades, they map the gaps and attempt to identify distinct created kinds. What's really interesting about baramenology is that they make use of evolutionary phylogenies, they just name them differently. So a holobaramen is an entire created kind. A holobaramen may contain many monobaramens, which is a group that all share a common ancestor within the holobaramen but are distinct from other groups within the holobaramen. So for instance, in this view, the domesticated dog would be a monobaramen within the holobaramen of dog kind. The domesticated dogs are a distinct group from wild wolves, so while they are both dog kind, they are distinct groups within the kind. When it starts to actually get interesting is when they talk about apobaramens and polybaramens, groups that contain multiple distinct kinds but share certain characteristics. They use phylogenetic methods to construct these polybaramens but exaggerate the importance of differences at specific locations on the phylogeny in order to make the case that they are distinct kinds that do not share a common ancestor with each other. In order to avoid the appearance of common descent in a polybaramen, it is recommended to represent the data using projection plots, networks, or lattices rather than trees. Of course, they don't state it quite so bluntly, but this is what it accomplishes. So we have no good working definition of what a kind is, and creationists struggle to group animals together by kind, mostly because it is a category that just doesn't exist in reality. Meanwhile, actual scientists struggle to define species properly. Now, do you know why they struggle to define species? I'll give you a hint. It is very closely linked to the reason why kind is so hard for creationists to define. It's because it's a category that doesn't really exist in reality. It is a human construct. It is human beings wanting to categorize and sort things. But because evolution happens, there is no fixed point at which something becomes a new species or ceases to be an old species. It is a gradient with no clear delineation. Species is a hard concept to define scientifically, specifically because evolution is true. And this is exactly the same problem that baramenologists run into with the word kind.
It's a despised word because it means that God didn't have to get today's approximately 6.5 million species to fit into the ark.
No, that's not why we dislike the word kind. This is creationists who deny evolution, appealing to evolution in order to fix one of the problems with the flood story. I will happily grant you that evolution happens. The problem is that it doesn't happen fast enough to go from 8,000-ish kinds that creationists claim were on the ark to the 6.5 million land species that exist today. Sure, implicit in the creationist claim is the idea that there's still only 8,000 or so kinds that exist today, but they've diversified into 6.5 million species. But you're still left with the fact that evolution just doesn't work that fast. And for that matter, human reproduction doesn't work that fast either. Ignoring the fact that there were several cultures on at least three continents that seemed to have survived the flood without noticing it, but in under 100 years, we have large and thriving civilizations in Egypt, Acadia, China, the Americas, and while we don't have much archaeological data on the Australian Aboriginals, the genetic data shows that there was a large amount of gene flow between India and Australia during that time period. So, yeah, keep using the word kind in order to appeal to evolution in your denial of evolution, if you like. It only serves to make you look silly.
It means Noah needed only one pair for the canine kind, from which would come all the species of dog, from the Chihuahua to the Great Dane.
What about dingoes? Were they dog kind? How about Borophaginae? It's not in the Caninae clade, but it is in the Canidae clade. Is it part of dog kind? What about Hesperocyoninae? Well, that's another Canidae member, so let's move past that. Miasis? It's pretty dog-like, but it definitely has some differences that keep it out of the Canidae clade. How about Hemicyoninae? This one is pretty clearly a dog as well, but it kinda looks like a cross between a dog and a bear, which might be why it's called a dog bear. Oh, but also it's in the same infraorder as the clade that contains skunks, weasels, raccoons, bears, seals, sea lions, and more. So, is a raccoon dog kind? Because if this dog bear is dog kind, then that would definitely include raccoons in dog kind, and all the other guys that I mentioned. Now, here I have been appealing to superficial similarities to make my case. All these guys look related, but I don't want to fall into the same trap as creationists and just declare that something is related because it looks similar. Well, the genetics line up with this as well, though it is worth mentioning that while their position in the Caniformia clade is undisputed, their specific spots within the clade with relation to each other is not an entirely settled matter. But one thing is certain here, they are all closely related to each other. Seals or dogs is what I'm getting at.
And one pair for the feline kind, from which would come the domesticated cat and the tiger, etc.
Which, through similar phylogenetic tracing, gets us to mongooses and hyenas being cats as well. Hell, using tracing like this, whales are cow kind. So does that mean that Noah could have skipped the cows, since whales represent that kind and would have been safe in the ocean? And, of course, safe here is a relative term, as Noah's flood, if it happened as described, would most certainly have wiped out all ocean life as well.
So now we're talking just thousands of animals, not millions.
Yeah, usually the number given is about 16,000, cared for over the course of a year by 8 people. 8 people. The Buffalo Zoo only has about 1,200 individual animals, less than 10% of the animals on the ark. And while I'm having a hard time finding staffing numbers, I can tell you from having been to that zoo on a number of occasions that they most definitely have more than 8 people employed in animal care. Taking care of animals is not an easy task, and there are supposed to be 8 people caring for 16,000 individual animals. If all 8 of them are doing nothing but caring for the animals 24 hours a day without sleep, they can only spend 45 seconds on each animal in order to get through all the animals every day. Sorry, I don't buy it.
And because these animals need not have been fully grown, averaging the size of a sheep, it becomes possible.
Nope. The size of the animals is literally one of the least important considerations when talking about why the story of Noah is impossible. Now, that said, a single sheep produces about 7.4 kilograms of methane per year. If this is due to size, and so the average size of the animal on the ark was the size of a sheep, then we'd expect the methane production to be about the same. For 16,000 individual animals, that gives us 324 kilograms of methane being pumped into the belly of the ark every day. Using the mass of air calculation, that works out to roughly 0.63% of the overall air in the ark. Methane becomes lethal when its levels reach about 5%. At this rate, that would take 8 days. Well, let's be generous and say that this Ark had a state-of-the-art ventilation system that replaced 75% of the air of the Ark every single day. Well, now they've got a month until the methane buildup reaches lethal levels. And actually, it would likely have been at least a little bit longer. The fact that 75% gets swapped out per day would impact the calculation, I think. But I'm not a math whiz. Someone in the comments will figure it out, I'm sure. I got to the point where I decided that I've spent enough time calculating sheep farts, it's time to move on. My point here is that Noah and his family would have died from animal farts before the flood was over, and so would a good chunk of the animals, many of which have a lower tolerance for things like methane than we do. Maybe that's why he needed seven pairs of all the birds.
Another consideration is the size of the Ark. It wasn't a little rubber ducky bobbing boat portrayed in kids' cartoons.
No, you're right. It was larger than it's possible for a wooden boat to be and still be seaworthy. The longest wooden ship to have ever been built was the Wyoming, which even with metal bracing, the wooden planks flexed to a point where steam-powered pumps had to be engaged constantly to keep water out of the hold. Now, if we do not include the long pointy bit on the bow, the Wyoming was 100 feet shorter than the Ark, and you're expecting me to believe that this Ark was seaworthy?
It was a massive three-level ship, the size of 1.5 football fields.
A decidedly unimpressive number given how large our cargo ships and cruise liners are today, but certainly the most impressive ship ever imagined by the people living in the ancient Near East around the time Noah's story was written.
Another argument skeptics have against the worldwide flood is that there's not enough water on the Earth to cover the highest mountains.
Right. If all the water on the surface of the Earth were in liquid form simultaneously, water levels would rise about 70 meters, not nearly enough to cover all the high hills, much less any of the mountains.
They forget that mountains were not the height they are now.
Oh, right, you want all the tectonic activity of the last 4 billion years to be condensed into a 1 year period in an event that would have released enough energy to vaporize the Earth. Sure, but like I said, 70 meters doesn't even cover all the high hills. If we take a road trip just an hour and a half away from where I live to Caledon, Ontario, we find that the highest elevation there is 485 meters above sea level, and the lowest is 221 meters. So if we lower the lowest point of Caledon to sea level and then drop all the water on the Earth down in liquid form, then the highest points in Caledon are still 194 meters above sea level. Now, I purposely chose Caledon because it is a very hilly area, which made bike riding there as a kid a lot of fun. But even where I'm located, right on the shores of Lake Erie, we're at an elevation of 187 meters above sea level. So even though I live right by a body of water, I would be perfectly safe from Noah's flood. Well, just considering the water level rise, at least. There'd be plenty of other things that would kill me in that event.
And that the Earth and the sky store trillions of tons of water. The Bible says that the floodwaters came from both the sky and the Earth.
If all of the water in the atmosphere rained down at the same time, it would cover the entire planet with, wait for it, 1 inch of water. 1 inch. I've been ignoring atmospheric water for my calculations because it is insignificant compared to things like the ice caps. And let's face it, 70 meters is just easier to say than 70.0254 meters. Although, I have been finding out over the last week that a lot of y'all seem to have problems with rounding, so maybe I do need to say 70.0254. As to the water from the Earth, I feel like he's about to bring up the ringwoodite thing that we discussed last week, but he never actually does say that, so I think he maybe doesn't know about the ringwoodite thing yet. He just wants to imply that there's lots of water underground, as though nobody has thought of groundwater when calculating how much water is on the Earth. And that's actually the end of the video. Just a short one today. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Michael Price, who says, "I would never bother to watch the original creationist video because I know you don't quote mine. You don't need to. My time is valuable, and I know watching creationists is wasting it." I have mixed feelings about this one. On the one hand, I really do appreciate the trust, and I understand not wanting to waste time with creationist materials. On the other hand, I am human. It's possible that I have made a mistake, and I can promise you that I will never purposely quote mine someone, but there have been a handful of instances where I misunderstood the point that was being made, and so cut out a part that I considered to be inconsequential, but which ended up being an important part of the argument. So part of me wants to say, no, don't just trust me, go check to make sure that I'm not up to any shenanigans, but I also understand perfectly that most people have better things to do with their time than watch creationist content. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the sheep farts that kill the flood survivors that are my channel. If you'd like to make sure that life on Earth ended 4,300 years ago, you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my PO Box address. See you next time.